Hello and welcome to the Yard Pro Show, brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. I'm one of your hosts today, Mills Grant.
And I'm Scott Beard.
And it is a delight to be here, is it not, Scott?
It is.
I'm trying to get my headphones, all that good stuff situated. Saturated. So, folks, welcome to the Yard Pro Show, brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. Pretty simple during the week. If you'd like to find us at Carolina Fresh Farms, you may do that by visiting www.carolinafreshfarms.com. There you will find a link to all the fun things like how to properly maintain my lawn. Maybe you're in the need of a new lawn, Scott. How do I select the proper lawn? Maybe you just need to remulch because the mulch is just old, tired, and worn out. You know, that season's going to be upon us before we know it, right?
It is.
Start seeing the leaves drop, get those cleaned up, a little bit of mulching, you know. So, hey, it's a pretty simple format, wouldn't you say?
I would.
Today is a great day to call us live, your opportunity. Just remember this, Scott. They are not listeners. They are participants. So if you tuned in right now, you're participating. You didn't know that. Welcome, if you're new. You can participate by giving us a call at 1-800-347-1063. That's 800-347-1063. And you can text us at 71307. We'd love to have your questions, your comments, your thoughts for the day, as they relate to your lawn, your landscape, all that good jazz, wouldn't you say?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't work.
Give it time.
Think so?
I would.
So, Scott.
Well, you got a big stack over there today. You must have worked hard last night.
No, I worked hard last week. Same stack I had last week.
You said week. I said night.
No. Yeah. It's the same stack I had last week. I just pulled it back out.
That is the same stack.
Yeah. How you like that? So, last week, we had a lot of topics we kind of discussed. We, you know, for all of our participants, we made them become listeners last week. And we're out of the showroom or the sound booth. Weren't live, but hopefully it was a good show. We talked a lot about things going on. And, you know, my how the seasons have kind of changed. I think next week they're going to go back to where we were 2 weeks ago in this upcoming week. Looks like it's going to be in the 90s in the upstate, mid-90s in the Midlands, down on the coast. Now, the nighttime temps, though. If you notice how nice and cool and refreshing it is every morning when you walk out the door.
Mm-hmm. That felt good.
Didn't it, though? Mm. Sorry, I got to get the coffee in me. Seasons are changing. So you wake up a little stuffy.
Because of coffee? You have coffee every day.
No, I need to get it in me. That's what I'm saying. Got to hydrate myself. Get ready.
Hydrate?
Yeah. All this fun stuff.
Fun stuff.
That's right. But seasons are changing, right?
They are.
But we don't want to let the guard down. There's no doubt about that. I mean, we're grateful, we're thankful, because looking at the weekly drought report, drum roll, okay, let's reveal it. It's the same county it was a week before. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Was that Chester County, I believe it was?
Yeah, because you said you were up in that Pageland area.
Yeah. So it's the same county. It's still abnormally dry. Other than that, in the state of South Carolina, we're in great shape when it comes to moisture. Now, the one thing that concerns me, now that we're getting these cooler temperatures, it feels like what? Football. And I've always said it, when it feels like football, guess what happens? We begin to wonder and think about things like large patch. Things of that nature. On our warm season grasses. Still a little warm in that Midlands area where large patch really hits pretty heavy. High humidity, a lot of rain, cool nights. We're still warm during the day. Still a little warm probably to put our preventative out, but we're getting there. We're getting closer every day. When those nighttime temps drop to 70 or below consistently, and that soil temps begins to drop. But those daytime temps are up in 80, somewhere in that neighborhood. Or 70 to 80, and the night times are down in that 50 to 60s. That's when we really begin to see this large patch become active. So we want to get this preventative fungicide out before then. So keep an eye on that. You know, with ample soil moisture, that can really wreak havoc on a warm season lawn, like zoysia, St. Augustine, centipede especially. Centipede seems to be highly susceptible to that. Scott, we're going to go to the phone lines. We have our first participant of the day. We have Al in Columbia. Hello, Al, and welcome to the Yard Pro Show.
Hello. Good morning, fellas. How are y'all?
We're great.
Good, good. Trying to get a hold of that Tamstar St. Augustine this summer and just couldn't do it. Every time I called down to the shop, they told me, call back in a couple of weeks. Were there some issues with it or something happened to the crop?
Yeah, there's a grave issue this summer in growing grass, just like your own home lawn and everybody in the state. Lack of sunlight and too much water. So, lack of sunlight, man. All these cloudy.
I've never heard that one.
Yeah, all these cloudy days. I mean, if you really go back and map it, you know, when you have rain, you have the fronts and the amount of moisture that we had this summer. I mean, you start looking at it and you're like, my goodness, we've got half the sunlight we would normally have. And
interesting.
And when you have that, when you're trying to grow grass in, it wreaks havoc. It puts everything behind. So yeah, we're a little bit further behind than where we had anticipated back in the spring. Nothing wrong with the grass, the variety of grass. It's virtually every grass, you know, growing on any sod farm in the Carolinas have kind of been faced with this, maybe with the exception of something like fescue. You know, those that are trying to oversummer fescue when they're in their fields had a pretty successful go at it. But with the amount of cloud cover, the cooler temps, and the amount of rain that we're getting, it is just difficult to get things to grow off 100% to where they're perfect. And anytime you release a new product, or any product for that matter, you know, our goal is to give you the best product we can give. And when we go into a sod field, we begin to harvest and we begin to lift, even though we think, hey, man, it looks like it's ready. And you start lifting that grass and you realize, hey, we're getting either ample waste. And when we start seeing a lot of waste in the field, we know that what's going on the pallet is probably not the best sod. It's just going to be a little weak and a little tender. And the last thing we really want to see is sending some sod out that somebody's unhappy with. Now, I know we've got some listeners.
I hear you.
We got some listeners, I'm sure, Al, that are laughing, going, well, you didn't have that problem 2 years ago when you sent some grass to my house. Unfortunately, we're dealing with a living product. You know, we're dealing a lot of sod harvesting, even though it's automated machinery. There's still the human error factor that factors in, and sometimes you get some less than adequate sod. We know that happens. But we've always taken the standpoint in our company that, hey, if you're not happy with a product, call us immediately. Don't call me 2 weeks after you've installed your yard. Call me the day you're laying sod and say, hey, something doesn't look right here, or I'm not totally satisfied. Send us some pictures and let us address it immediately so that we can make a determination what needs to happen and have some kind of track history, and more or less so that we can also go back to our fields and evaluate what's growing and say, all right, do we have an issue here that we're not aware of? Yeah, there's so many things in there, but it's just been a tough – I know it sounds crazy, Al. I've had a lot of friends come up to me, you know, Sunday at church. It's virtually every Sunday. Hey, Mills, I bet y'all are just having a great season. I mean, all this rain. And I just look at them and shrug my shoulders and go, no, really, it's not what we want. I mean, we have irrigation systems to supply the water. And when I'm in control of moisture, guess what? I can do a pretty good job in it. But when the man upstairs is in control, he gives you what he wants to give you, and you gotta learn how to adjust to it. And in a lot of instances this year, it was just, I hate to say it, it was almost too much water. I mean, it's on the golf course side of things, grow in greens conversions, a lot of these golf courses are behind or struggling, you know, to get the golf courses grown in right now if they did a conversion this year. It's just been a tough season, believe it or not.
Gotcha.
Been a good season for survivability, not growing. Sure.
Yeah, and one other question, if you don't mind. I don't know if this is for right now going into the fall or whether this information is going to help me out in the springtime, but I have centipede, and I've got nut sedge or sedge weed? What's it called? Yellow nut sedge, I think.
There's yellow nut sedge. There's purple nut sedge. There's all kind of sedges
nut
out
sedge
there.
And then it's growing. It's just kind of almost growing. It's not like it's clumped in one area. it's just kind of popping up all over in a centipede, along with some, I don't know if they call it soft crabgrass. It doesn't look like it looks like a form of the crabgrass. But anyway, it's almost 80% centipede with, you know, 15 or 20% of that sedge and that crabgrass going in there. And it's driving me nuts because I don't know what to put on it. And I feel like if I put something on it, since it's kind of dispersed through there instead of just a big patch, that I'm going to kill my centipede as well. What would the treatment be for that?
Scott, what's your thoughts?
I would go with sedgehammer starting this week.
Yeah, you could use some sedgehammer for your sedge. You could beat down a little bit on the crabgrass as well. The other product that's out there, Scott, that we forget about, we have the small bottles in the stores, a product called Tenacity. And Tenacity will do a really good job on that yellow nut sedge, especially this time of the year. And it is going to ding up that crabgrass as well. You're looking bright-eyed at me, Scott. I wish you could see Scott right now. He's looking at me bright-eyed like.
Only on a centipede lawn.
What, Tenacity?
Or a fescue.
Or St. Augustine. So, yeah.
But not on a Bermuda.
Yeah, so the problem and what he's referencing now, Tenacity is a really neat herbicide. It's a photosynthetic inhibitor. So it's really kind of cool to spray in the yard because the weeds begin to turn white. You know, I had a guy yesterday, it's a similar chemical that you can use on Bermuda called Pilex. It will ding up some Bermuda, but it does pretty good at also controlling or knocking back goosegrass. He calls it white death. He's like, man, I just sprayed some white death on my goosegrass. And because it does, it bleaches whatever it affects, it bleaches it white. So if you spray it on Bermuda, which it doesn't, it controls Bermuda. So if you spray Tenacity on Bermuda, it's going to bleach it white. So my fear is you spray Tenacity on your centipede lawn, you may see more imperfections and more foreign grasses growing than you ever thought because, man, the contrast is phenomenal. But, you know,
It won't hurt the centipede.
But it won't hurt the centipede. Now, the neat thing with Tenacity, too, if you got kids around the house, you could spray it and not tell them, and 2 days later when it's white, you can say, look, kids, it already snowed, but it just snowed in this one area right on top of this grass here.
There you go.
But Tenacity, sedgehammer, something of that lines, you're right. If you've got yellow nut sedge, that nut sedge, the way it normally grows during the year, it is a perennial that comes from a tuber. So it's growing right now, and it's trying to take all the energy as it grows from those leaf blades, and it's trying to store energy for the winter. So we've got this situation where it's beginning to run energy back into the root system instead of the opposite where it's trying to grow.
Right.
So if we introduce a herbicide at this point of time, we seem to get pretty good control in late August, early September on our sedges with this product. But I will say this.
Tenacity and go ahead.
What I was going to say, though, one of the reasons you're seeing these weeds, the crabgrass, the Tenacity, is because of the amount of rain that we had. Funny how this goes back full circle to our beginning conversation, right? This is one of those challenges this year that we're getting more and more weed reports at this time of the year than we've seen in recent years, and it's because of the amount of moisture that we've had.
Gotcha. Can both of those be used at the same time in the same application, the sedgehammer and the Tenacity, or is that going to be too much shock to the system?
Off the top of my head, I would say yes, but I don't know if it's warranted. I think what you may want to do is do one or do the other.
Which one would you say? Would you go with the Tenacity because it's going to cover the nut sedge as well as the crabgrass?
Well, both of them, it's Tenacity and nut sedge both will cover. I mean, Tenacity and sedgehammer will cover the nut sedge, but the sedgehammer is only going to control the nut sedge. So if you want to try to ding up that crabgrass, you may want to go with the Tenacity product.
All right. And in the springtime, is there a pre-emergent to stop the nut sedge from coming in?
I think that's debatable. There's only one that I know of. It's an old product by BASF called Tower. Not certain if it's labeled for centipede lawn off the top of my head, but it has shown some pre-emergent capabilities on yellow nut sedge. But I feel like if you put a pre-emergent out, even though it's not labeled to control nut sedge and Kalinga and things like that, I do feel like a good pre-emergent does keep some of that at bay, but it's not going to be perfect. It's not as easy as controlling crabgrass or controlling goosegrass. It's more of a post-emergent thing. The good thing with the Tenacity product is if you use it, I mean, the small bottle, what is it, a 2 ounce bottle, Scott? Something mm-hmm. or maybe a four ounce bottle, and it's what, $50-$60? It's not terribly cheap, but keep in mind the rate is 4 ounces per acre. Okay?
Wow.
So if you did something like Tenacity, you're gonna have ample of it left for next spring and next fall. And when you begin to see that nut sedge, or maybe you skip an area with pre-emergent inadvertently and you see little crabgrass coming up, you'll have something on the shelf that is very useful. That, to me, the Tenacity product, a lot of these products have a restriction of you using during the times of transition on centipede. And I feel like the Tenacity is just safer for the majority of the year to spray on your lawn and safer for the centipede.
And is it a spot application or a just go out and cover all of it? Because once again, it's kind of interspersed. It's not clumped.
It can be either way. It's up to you as the user. You could spot spray it. You could blanket spray it. I mean, if you're scattered about with the nut sedge, I think you're probably looking more at a, hey, I need to blanket spray this one front lawn from one edge to the other. I mean, certainly if you've got a 4,000 square foot area in the lawn that has absolutely no weed in it, I personally wouldn't waste my money and spray a herbicide.
You know? No, I got you. I'm just tired of going out there and pulling it by hand in the evening time, man, because it doesn't seem to work anyway. It keeps coming back.
So I hate the whole issue with the Tamstar, but I will tell you, we should be pulling and start harvesting some Tamstar hopefully this coming week. We should have a little bit available.
You think it's a little too late to go ahead and install it? I mean, I don't mind waiting until next spring. Would I get a better take if I just waited until next spring?
It's hard to tell. Your risk will be less. I mean, certainly there's an inherent risk of sodding a warm season grass this close to fall. There is certainly a little bit of added risk, but I think the risk is minimal.
Awesome. And y'all have that Tenacity down there at the store?
We should have some Tenacity at the Columbia store. If not, they should be able to get their hands on it within, 24 to 48 hours. But they should have some there.
Awesome.
Good little product. Awesome. We probably hadn't talked about it a lot over the years, but great product.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. You're helpful as always, and y'all have a great rest of the weekend.
You do the same, Al. Thanks for the call.
All right. Thank you now.
Bye-bye. Scott, man, we can make an entire show with Al.
That was good.
You know? Maybe those weeks that I can't make it to the show or you can't make it, maybe we should just call Al and say, hey, Al, why don't you be our guest and just ask questions? I mean, great questions. And such a – I mean, I hate to say it. I know some folks in the Midlands, in the lower part of the state, are going to say, man, I don't know what you're talking about. But such a niche market. You know, the problem with centipede, just like all grasses have issues, but one of the major issues and hurdles we've always had with centipede – and to a degree with St. Augustine, but even more so with centipede, it is such a niche market. I mean, if you look at the volume or the square footage of centipede lawns in the United States versus Bermuda lawns, I mean, dude, there's like no centipede in that model because it is such a niche market as to where centipede will survive, will grow, will thrive. I mean, it is the Midlands of South Carolina down to the coast. It is middle part of Georgia down to their coast. But when you get into Florida, you just don't see a whole lot of centipede. I mean, it's really like a three-state, four-state grass, whereas Bermuda, heck, you see it in virtually, certainly you go up northeast, midwest, where it's really cold, it gets knocked back. But some form of Bermuda grows, in probably, 30 states in this union? I mean, It's almost everywhere. But centipede's such a niche market, and Tenacity, great product, but it is a very niche product because it's in that niche market. So we probably don't talk about it enough, but I know we have a lot of listeners and participants who have a centipede lawn, and Tenacity to me is just a phenomenal product. I mean, it's one of our primary go-tos in sod production because it's safe. It's a low-use product. And it covers such a broad spectrum of issues within centipede. So great little product. Can use it on St. Augustine. I will warn you, if you use it on St. Augustine, especially in the spring of the year, up to early summer, that new lush little growth you're getting on the St. Augustine when it begins to green up, it will somewhat bleach those new little runners for about 7 to 10 days. They'll be a little curled up, a little funky looking, a little white, but it grows out of it. And give it 10 days, it'll grow out. So, but just a phenomenal product. So, Scott, I appreciate the phone call from Al today. How about you?
I do too.
Really good one. You know, brought up a lot of topics. You know, one of the things we can talk about, we're getting pretty close to that bottom of the hour break, folks, but one of the things we really could talk about when we come back, too, is it too late to sod a warm season grass? You know, we touched on that briefly with our previous caller, Al. There is some inherent risk as you get closer. The closer you get to that fall transition and you're on the tail end of the growing season, great fault. You're at that tail end. There's some inherent risk there for the fact that how well can you get it rooted in, grown in, especially if we get a harsh winter. You know, it's a warm season grass, and, you know, winters, especially last winter, wasn't terribly kind to a lot of warm season grasses. So, yeah, there's an inherent risk, but it doesn't warrant, hey, I'm not going to do anything. If I'm looking at bare dirt and I need to do something, I would certainly I'd probably go ahead and pull the trigger and lay some sod. Is my thoughts. Yes, I have to, by my nature, I have to tell you that there's an increased risk, but I don't know if the risk is high enough to warrant not doing something or looking at bare dirt through the winter months. So, Scott, I can't believe it. It's that bottom of the hour, folks. You're listening to the Yard Pro Show, brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. Pretty simple to find us during the week at www.carolinafreshfarms.com. When we come back, hopefully we'll have some more phone calls. The phone lines are open, 1-800-347-1063. And I'm also going to take a little time. We have a few texts that came in. You can find us there at 71307. Hope you have a good bottom of the hour break. Don't take too long, because when we come back, we're going to have some great topics. We'll talk to you in a few. Welcome back to the Yard Pro Show, brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. I'm one of your hosts today, Mills Grant.
And I'm Scott Beard.
And it is a delight to be here today. There's a lot going on.
There's a bunch going on.
I tell you what, Scott, there's a tremendous amount going on. And we have our good friend Don from Columbia is on hold. I'm going to let him hold for no more than a minute. Is that fair?
That's fair.
Because I promised all of the participants that I would get to a couple text questions, and we have a lot, and I want to get into a couple of them real quick because I think they're pretty quick and easy to get to. So let's go right here. Can you recommend a green, round, smaller shrub that I can plant in front of my house? I'm pulling up old, grown-up shrubs. Doing a little shrub renovation there. Can you think of anything?
Green and soft-touch holly?
Soft-touch hollies are nice. Depending on the size, you know, even the dwarf yopons are still around. They're very hardy. Don't seem to have that many issues. It's limitless and endless. But I will say this. I want to make this suggestion. It's in front of your house. Whether you have a porch that you really want to highlight, or especially windows. You know, windows per square foot of facial front of a house, you're paying about four times the rate of your siding, whether it's vinyl, brick, rock, it doesn't matter. Windows are expensive, right? Mm-hmm. Don't cover up your windows. That's the most expensive thing on the outside facade of your house. Why would you cover it up, right? And not only that, you get a shrub too close to the window or covering up the window, and it covers the bottom sill. Now guess what? You go to sell that house, and some home inspector's going to beat you up about the casement of your windows. Look, but the brick molding's starting to rot out. So now you got to replace brick molding.
Seen a lot put burgundy lorapetalums in front of their
Oh, yeah. That makes sense. An 8-foot-tall weed, you know? Oh, I'm sorry for those that are listening that love their burgundy lorapetalums. If planted in the right place, it's gorgeous. But, you know, and planted in a spot right up against the foundation of the house where they need to be maintained at 2 or 3 foot of height, it's not the place to plant them. You need to go back, I think, to some of the old school stuff. All right, I've been on my soapbox long enough. Don's been waiting a minute. Let's go to Don, our good friend in Columbia. Hello, Don, and welcome to the Yard Pro Show.
Hey, man, I don't mind waiting as long as I can keep hearing your show.
Well, and I probably gave you a little chuckle on that last rant, too. You know, but don't cover up your windows, Don, right? What's the point? That's why they make curtains.
I got a friend of mine that's got a beautiful Japanese maple that's covering up a nice arched window. He said, I need that maple cut down and trimmed back, and so I know what you mean.
You're not wrong. So what can we help you with today on a nice Saturday?
Well, I just wanted to share a situation where it wasn't my customer. It was the next door neighbor that had a beautiful stand at St. Augustine, but he kept having problems in it. And he ended up, I noticed it was all browned out. And I said, what happened to your lawn? He said, we sprayed it with Roundup. And I said, well, what are you going to do? He said, well, my landscaper's going to replace it with Bermuda. And I said, well, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I said, you planted St. Augustine because you had shade issues, and now they're going to put Bermuda in, which I don't think is a great grass because of the maintenance on it. And from the knowledge I got from you guys, I suggested going into looking up some zoysias that are a little more shade tolerant.
Yeah.
And he ended up, I think, going with a Roy or a Palisades, which I'm pretty certain he bought from you guys out there at Clemson Road.
Yep.
And he is tickled to death with it. It looks great. He said, what I owe you? I said, nothing. Next time you're looking for a landscaper, hire me.
Yeah. Well, I think you bring up a lot of good things there. Number one, there's more way to skin a cat when you're landscaping in the transition zone in the southeast. There are a lot of options to you. And you got to choose kind of the lesser of the two or three evils that are possibly growing your lawn. And I hear you with the Bermuda, you know, a couple issues there. One is it's shady, so it's not going to hit a lick. You know, we have access. We have some Bermudas that supposedly are more shade tolerant. But at the end of the day, it's Bermuda, folks. It's not shade tolerant. It needs to grow in the sunlight. You know?
Well, if it grows like it's supposed to, if you cut it every 2 weeks, you go in sometimes during summer and brown it out.
Mm. And that's
and
the
then
other
you go
issue.
A week and,
you know,
right.
You hit the nail on the head, too. Bermuda, as far as the warm season grasses go, bar none, the highest maintenance grass out there. And the highest maintenance for the fact that you have to mow it routinely. If you wait 2 weeks, now you got a messed up lawn. If you, as much, you know, moisture as we've had, and then you get a week of hot temperatures and the ground saturated, oh, I'm not going to mow. You can't get out there and mow it frequently enough. You're going to have issues with it. You know, you're cutting in the stem tissue. You're looking at white turf. It's just, you know, and I know that a lot of folks out there with Bermuda, we sell an awful lot of it. You know, acreage-wise on the farm, out of 2,500 acres of sod production at Carolina Fresh and New Life Turf, you know, Bermuda, bar none, has the highest percentage of production because we sell so much. But Bermuda's a commodity, and it's great for a lot of people, but it's also a detriment for a lot of people because they don't always understand how much maintenance goes into Bermuda. Yes, it's the cheapest sod available to man. It's a commodity. There's a reason it's cheap. It's because it grows fast, you know.
And then the other thing that I'm going to get on a little soapbox for some of your listeners, that I had a customer that I thought she had a nice stand at St. Augustine, and I noticed something kind of creeping into it, and I suspected a fungus. And I talked to her, and 2 weeks later, nothing been done. I called her back because I really don't – I have my hands full cutting grass. And I kind of leave a lot of that to the professionals. And so I called her back 2 weeks later, and she hadn't done anything yet. She was going to get on it. Turned out it was cinch bug. She lost half of her lawn with something that could have been easily taken care of if they'd have got right on it.
Yep.
And when you notice something going wrong, don't wait a month or two.
No. Call immediately. And you heard me tell Al that in the first caller of the show is, you know, when we were talking about, yeah, we try our best to give you the best quality product available And we don't have product available because it's not quite ready for harvest, and we're just we don't want to be known for company as they're okay, their grass is it's okay, they got good prices, but their grass is okay. We want to be known for, hey man, they're jam up, but we know we're not perfect, and sometimes you get an inferior product, and if you get an inferior product, call us immediately. If you have something, if your lawn looks great Tuesday evening when you go to bed and Wednesday morning you get up and you see a brown spot in your yard, if you're not 100% certain what it is, pick up the phone and call somebody. Discover what the problem is and figure it out.
Nowadays, you take a picture, email it to you guys, and bam, you probably have some kind of a solution at hand.
Yeah, by the end of the day.
It's not like the old days when, 9 people had to look at it.
Exactly. So.
Anyway, I guess I've eaten enough of your time up.
Well, Don, we appreciate you calling us. It's been a while. So good to hear from you.
We appreciate you being on here and giving out the information you do.
Well, we appreciate what you're doing out there. And don't be a stranger. Give us a call again and don't make it so long in between your calls. How about that?
Well, I always call when I got something to talk about.
That's right, Don.
Have a nice day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Scott, always a delight to talk with Don. In the Columbia market, and I tell you, folks, there are a lot of people like Don out there that do a lot of really good work in the landscape industry, and you just got to find them and get to work with them, and it's always refreshing to hear that Don's making a profession out there as a lawn care operator, and that he's trying to learn just like we're trying to learn, us professionals in the industry daily are trying to learn new things, man, and I tell you, I get so overzealous and excited about some new stuff. I mean, I got some things right now that I could do 4 shows, Scott, about new things, ideas and products and things that are coming down the pipes that in the next couple of years, I think, or to a degree, are just going to revolutionize and solve a lot of problems for a lot of people in landscapes. There's, it's fun to learn something new every day. And that's why I keep doing it. That's why I enjoy doing this show, Scott. You learn something by talking with the public that's out there. You learn something. So, Scott, I want to go back. We have, maybe 9 minutes or so, maybe 10. I don't know, a little bit more than that. Who knows? We got some time left, but we have a slew of text messages. I tell you, this world is a changing, man. Social media, right?
Yes.
Let's text it, let's Snapchat it, let's Instagram it. How many ways are there? Oh, we can tweet it, right, in that one?
I do none of those.
Facebook it. I think only the old gray-headed people. I don't even do Facebook, but people my generation do the Facebook thing, right? Isn't that what they're saying now?
Mm-hmm.
That my kids' generation, they're all into the Instagram, the Snapchats. And I don't know who uses Twitter. People our generation. But apparently they all know how to use text because we have a lot of text messages, and I think there's some great ones here. So we talked a little bit. Can you recommend a green, round, smaller shrub? I think something in the holly. The boxwoods, especially if you go more of like a – instead of a traditional European English boxwood, if you go more Japanese, those seem to be hardier. And those shrubs, if you want something small, contained, neat, that you don't have to do a lot of pruning with – that's a shrub that you're going to plant. I will tell you this, though. If you're looking at boxwoods, they can get, especially the English boxwoods, can get relatively expensive very quickly. But buy the largest shrub that your pocketbook will allow you to buy because they are slow growers. Don't buy, it's so cute, it's a little one-gallon plant, and you want it to fill that space in the next 2 or 3 years because it's probably not going to do it. Buy the largest shrub, and that's with any shrub. But if you're renovating your landscape, buy the largest shrub that your pocketbook can stand. You'll be much happier. And space them out properly. Just because they're smaller, they're in a 1 gallon to a 2 gallon to a 3 gallon pot, doesn't mean you need to buy 3 times as many. Space them out. Yeah, it might look a little goofy, but 5 years from now when they mature, you're going to be so happy you spaced them out. Because if you tighten up that spacing because, they're smaller right now, I'll just take some out down the road, then you're never going to do it because you're like, I paid for that plant. And Aubrey over here, I mean, I've nursed her since she was a 1 gallon plant. You become attached, do you not? Right?
You name the plant.
That's why we garden. That's why people tune in and listen to us, Scott, because we all have a passion for gardening, right?
Yes.
And we take it pretty seriously. So let's move on to the next text question here. I have a very good stand of Bermuda grass, 3 years old. Does the direction I mow make a difference? Normally, I mow the same way each time, but the last couple of times I cut, I went a different direction, and some spots it seemed to pull the grass more and not cut as well. I can solve that solution in that dilemma.
Go ahead.
Don't mow your grass in the same direction every time. Okay? Because when we're dealing, and this is very astute of this texture, they understand that. They see it firsthand. There's no harm in mowing it the same direction every time, other than there's two things that are going to happen. Number one, if you're using a heavier mower like a riding mower, you're going to start to burn in what we call burning in tracks. Okay? Believe it or not, you cut the same direction, you got the same width mower. Those tracks, believe it or not, in our soil profiles all across South Carolina, you're going to begin to see little indentations where those lawnmower tracks run. The other thing, you're going to burn in the grain, what we call the grain of the growth of the grass. So as you mow across it, you're pushing that grain down. No matter what, it gets pushed down and matted down a little bit. It begins to grow a little bit in that direction. Not enough that you can always see it. Unless you're really trained to see it. But enough that the grain or the plant begins to grow in that direction. So when you cut the opposite direction, because you've got all these stolons laying on top of each other growing, you're right. You start pushing it back the other way, it kind of tufts it up. You get a little bit of tufting. And you also get a little bit truer mowing height when you cut against it. Okay, so if you mow the same direction every time, even though you're more set at 2 inches, by the end of the summer, effective mowing height may truly be like 2.5 inches. Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's kind of laying down. It's getting pushed down before the blades can clip it. So if we mow different directions every week, we get a truer height to cut, and we also somewhat, in mechanical ways, we kind of force that grass to grow more upright so it stands upright. That's why golf greens are mowed in a different direction every day. That's why your fairways, if you're a member of a club or play a lot of golf, it may seem that they're mowing the fairway in the same direction every time, but maybe they shadow cut where half of it is a light green and the other half is a dark green. Because you know, if you mow different directions on Bermuda, especially with a reel mower where you have reels mashing it down, you can see stripes in it. But you watch Major League Baseball. You know, you'll see
striped.
That they're striped, but if you notice, they probably switch up their stripes sometimes. Now, sometimes they don't, because from a TV visual effect, they may mow the same stripe pattern so they can burn that stripe in, burn that grain in, so it shows up even better on TV. But if it's your home lawn, get in the habit of mowing a different direction every time. I think it's healthier for the lawn to get you a truer height of cut, and then we don't get all these ruts in the soil. Pretty simple solution, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do now? We got a texture said, I did this, it's tufting, it's not cutting as well, that's fine. You may want to cut 2 times in that opposite direction so that you get the true height. Or you cut it that first day, you're changing direction, you hadn't done this in a while, maybe that same day you turn around and change direction and cut it again immediately after you cut it the first time. It's what we call a double cut. You can get the height to cut even truer, and you can take a lot of this away. Especially on Bermuda. Bermuda's a grainy plant. All right, Scott, we'll move on to the next one. When and what rate would you overseed Bermuda with rye? Goal is to minimize overwinter damage. All right, well, I'm going to stop right here on the reading the text. When I got to this point, I was like, well, overseeding Bermuda is not going to stop winter damage. It's actually going to exacerbate winter damage. But the last 4 words of this sentence, by a chocolate lab. And yes, I could see that. You got a big dog, especially labs, you know. Most of their life, they're pretty good, humble dogs, but they can be a little rambunctious when you let them out. They want to have fun. And just like having a bunch of kids playing flag football or soccer on a dormant Bermuda field, it begins to wear that turf out. And the overseeding can help protect the canopy of that turf. It can also look visually better. And could you imagine a dormant Bermuda lawn in a chocolate lab running out 30, 40, 50 minutes or an hour during the day when it's dormant and all that chaff is everywhere, and then it runs back inside?
And the clippings inside.
Yeah, most of that chaff's going to wind up on your living room floor, right? So overseeding could be suitable, but be aware that can also lead to some problems during spring transition if you're not managing it as a Bermuda lawn instead of an overseeded ryegrass lawn. A lot of people like to let the ryegrass grow too high, and they don't keep it cut down during that spring transition. Then it begins to compete with the Bermuda greening up, and now we have an issue. It begins to shade it. It begins to take nutrients. It begins to take water. So we have to know how to manage it on the backside. But to answer the question, when and at what rate, it depends on the ryegrass you're using. Perennial rye may want to persist, but they make herbicides to take care of it in the spring. But it's going to grow much lower. Perennial rye is what they overseed Augusta National with every year, folks. That's why Augusta National in April is so beautiful green. Okay, the base of their fairways are 419 Bermuda. The base of their tee box is 419 Bermuda. But you don't see a stitch of Bermuda in April on the television. You see the ryegrass. The reason the golf courses use perennial rye because you can mow it down to a half an inch or even less and still have nice coverage. It's designed to be mowed lower. Whereas annual rye is more like a forage grain mixture. It wants to bolt and grow real tall.
And different colors.
And a different color. It's very lime green. Perennial rye is very dark green. But if you went the perennial rye rate, you would want to get that rate down for a home lawn. I think you'd want to be the 250, 300 pounds per acre. So there's 43,560 square feet in an acre. You can do the math and figure it out. It doesn't take as much perennial rye to overseed a home lawn as what you would think on a 1,000-square-foot basis. What would that be, Scott? You got a calculator? It's too early in the morning for me.
Well, I don't have my glasses, so that's not going to work.
Well, you showed up without your glasses. So let's say if we did 300 pounds per acre, that's 7 pounds per thousand is all you need. Don't go heavier than that. Now, here's the deal. When you overseed a lawn, Scott, when it grows in, we want enough grass that when you're sitting in your car approaching your house or you're standing on your deck looking across your back lawn, that it has green to it. But when you stand in the lawn and you look straight down at your 2 feet, you should be able to see a little bit of dormant Bermuda coming through all that green. You should be able to see a little bit of Bermuda grass when that ryegrass is completely grown in. We don't want it so thick that we're covering up the ryegrass. So I would keep it, you know, 6-7 pounds per thousand. When would I do it? We got to let that Bermuda kind of slow down on its growth a little bit. We got to let the temperatures get a little cooler. We're quickly approaching that, I think, sometime in mid-September, late September. Mid to late September, by the first week, second week of October, I would have my overseeding done. It all varies on where you live. If you're in that Columbia market, you're probably going to want to wait till maybe first of October. If you're in the upstate market, you probably want to do it the second half of September. Okay. The other thing we want to do is put a little bit of starter fertilizer out when we overseed. That's going to help get that seed germinated, get it growing, get it healthy quicker. And then we just want to water it lightly every day until it germinates, begins to grow. And once it begins to grow and you're ready to mow it, start drying it down, cut the irrigation off. Pretty simple, wouldn't you say? All right. Is Tenacity safe on Zoysia? No. Tenacity is safe on Centipede, extremely tolerant. Centipede is extremely tolerant of Tenacity. St. Augustine, I would say there's good tolerance there. Not great, because we get that little whitening, especially in the spring of the year if you use it there. But Bermuda, Zoysia, absolutely not. Fescue is tolerant of Tenacity, so you can use it in the fescue lawn. But Tenacity is not safe on Zoysia. So which led to the next text question we got. What would be a suitable product to spray now on sedge in a Zoysia lawn? Sedgehammer.
Sedgehammer.
My favorite, however, is Monument. Now, Monument has gotten a little more difficult to find in small packaging because the manufacturer quit putting it in a small, what we call a blister pack, which made it affordable, economical, easily obtained for a homeowner. So if you buy Monument now, you have to buy it in a bigger container, which is more expensive. But trust me, that Monument will last you a lifetime. It will go a long way. This time of year would be my preferred on a Zoysia Bermuda lawn for nuts edge control. But Sedgehammer would be a suitable alternate that you can buy in a smaller quantity. Is much more economical. So look for the Sedgehammer if you have a Zoysia lawn or a Bermuda lawn and you're trying to control sedge. Right?
Yes.
Scott, you're not going to believe it.
It did go by fast.
Yeah. I can't believe it.
Nuts edge.
It's another Yard Pro show in the books, folks. We've really appreciate you participating today, those who texted and called in. We appreciate those who listened. And hopefully with some good information out there. We will see. If you'd like to find us during the week, folks, it's pretty simple. www.carolinafreshfarms.com. There you will find a link to a store closest to you. Email addresses if you have issues during the week. Send us a picture. We always like getting those. Send us a little note. We'll help you out as best we can. Folks, we hope you have a great week gardening, and we'll talk to you again next week. Hope you enjoy your time.